Welcome home. We are WNST, Towson Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are positively taking the Maryland Crab Cake Tour on the road. We'll be there Friday at Fabley's. Yes, I'm wearing my Pappas shirt, and there are four Pappas locations. We're downtown at the New Lexington Market on Friday. I will have Pac-Man scratch-offs. I've been practicing my Pac-Man, how to eat my logo. Luke Jones will be joining us. He is Baltimore Luke out on the interwebs, and he and I have been getting together frequently. You know, this whole baseball team stinking thing most of the last 15 years, it's been breezy and stuff, but you know, then you might fall asleep a little early one night when they're losing 5-0 and wake up to see that they're winning 7-5. Anything is possible offensively, but more than that, the debut of Jackson Holliday, and you and I spent much of, you know, Tuesday night into Wednesday saying, why here? Why now? Right-handed pitcher. He comes up to bat in the third inning instead of the first inning. He doesn't have the crowd yelling his name. He doesn't have 35,000 people on Friday night that are going to be, and he still struck out, went over, like, we can go through all of that, but when you talk about soft landing, we all want, oh, come up to Camden Yards, let us all give you love and all that. You know, it was pretty nerve-wracking even for his dad. The kid's 20 years old, and when you look at him, my wife says, does he shave?
Sure. Look, I still have the why. That's not changing. I don't think anyone can convince me otherwise of it being weird that he was sent down for 10 games and 10 games satisfied the objectives that Michael Elias laid out 3 weeks ago. But it's great that he's here. He's 20 years old. He's one of the best prospects we've seen in baseball over the last couple decades. When you look at the accelerated development, you know, four levels of minor league ball in one season. So he's
his at-bats at 20 in the minor leagues to make the big leagues. I'm going back in my lifetime. And I remember when Robin Yount came up. Okay. So like, that's how old I am. I remember my dad buzzing about 19-year-old. He might've been 18 at the time, Robin Yount coming up. And I remember the Van Poppels and mistakes, you know what I mean? Of young players coming up. David Clyde. I remember David Clyde nearly 50 years ago. You know, how many guys do this with less than 500 minor league at-bats? I mean, ever at 20, let alone at 23 or 24, if they had thousands of high school or college at-bats and all of that stuff. This is a very, very, very unique case. And it would have been unique 10 days ago, too.
Right. And that's my point, right? I mean, whether it's opening day, whether it was Wednesday night, whether it was 3 weeks from now, whether it was another month from now, there were going to be butterflies. There's going to be that excitement, whether it's at Camden Yards, whether it's at Fenway, whether it's at Yankee Stadium, as Mike Elias, when he was talking to us in Sarasota, even cited, you know, the pressures of playing at a place like Yankee Stadium. But he ripped the Band-Aid off, right? Experience. Good experience. Went 0-for-4, but drove in a run. I think fourth youngest Oriole in franchise history to drive in a run, you know, joining the likes of, I think it was Brooks Robinson, Ron Hansen, and Andy Etcheverry. I think I saw Sarah Lang's tweet
that out.
That's
right. Etcheverry came up real young. That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, that wasn't that. I didn't know that. I'm passing that along. I saw that on Twitter late Wednesday night. But I think for the most part, and, you know, the pop fly that fell in, I thought that was Cedric Mullins' ball, in all honesty, seeing that replay multiple times. You want your center fielder to take charge in a play like that. Wasn't easy either way.
I also think you're in a big field. You're in a new ballpark. It's all big. It's the first thing.
It's tough.
But more than that, I think the shadows of the right fielder and the center fielder ate him up. When I looked down at where the shadows came and when he kind of yipped a little bit, he saw shadow. I think
it's possible. I still think that's the outfielder's ball. I think Cedric Mullins, as a veteran gold glove caliber kind of center fielder, go back and look at it. He's not exactly on a dead sprint trying to catch it. Point is, there was nothing, even that, I don't even know if I'd caught the yips. I think it was a challenging play, and I think the outfielder should have called him off. I'd say it about it if he was a veteran second baseman there. Point is, I didn't see too much that made me say, oh, he looks 20 years old. He struck out a couple times, sure. He had some swing and miss. They had a lot of swing and miss against Cutter Crawford, who really shut them down for five innings. I thought he had, you know, some competitive at-bats. You know, he had an RBI ground out. It was fine. You know, it wasn't a historic debut, obviously, from a success standpoint. But I didn't look at him and say, ooh, that didn't look good, in the way that, frankly, Colton Cowser looked last year for the most part, not in his debut, but how he looked for that month that he was up in the majors. So I'd view it through the lens of it was fine. So far, so good. We'll see how he looks Thursday night. We'll see how he looks over the weekend and let the kid play. Let it breathe, right? We talked about this. Adley Rutschman, who was more than ready for the major leagues a couple years ago at 24 when the Orioles called him up. He struggled for about 4 weeks. Gunnar Henderson, you know, had his cup of coffee late in 22 and then started last year. He was hitting, what, 180 as of the second week of May, I think it was. So let him play. They're going to pencil his name into the lineup, probably hitting eighth or ninth, at least for right now.
Get him an apartment up here. Get him settled up. Get him in here. Yeah, we'll go see the Brewers if it doesn't rain. And we'll. The thing that struck me this week was Colton Cowser being the hero of Birdland and doing the post-game thing with Melanie, one of those people. And he looked like he had been there before. He spoke like a big leaguer. He spoke like a grown-up. He spoke like a guy that I'd like to talk to if David Rubenstein's so kind to extol upon me a press credential that he extols upon you. I don't know any of these kids, right? I don't know any of them. I've dropped you off at the front door at Sarasota and minded my own business. But then I see them on TV, and there's a part where you feel like, are they ready for it baseball-wise? That's not for me to say. That's for Mike Elias to say. That's for hitting 300 in Sarasota against whatever kind of pitching they threw at Jackson Holliday to say, is he ready or is he not? But there's also the part of doing your laundry, catching the bus, getting, like, being in a new city, being on an airplane, like doing all of these things as a 20-year-old on every third day when your stuff's in Norfolk the other day. And you were thinking, well, maybe I'll be up in May, but I got to play well. But, you know, but they're not going to call me. I don't think he looked like he was in the office with the manager in Norfolk the other night looking like he was in there thinking, this is my time. The further along it goes, it becomes more of your time. But I think psychologically, the family, doing the laundry, literally, you'll laugh at that. But I knew Mike Mussina when he was young. I knew all of these guys when they got called up and down. And everything that would happen to every Jeffrey Hammonds in 1996, 7, 8, when they would get called up is, it's chaotic. It's if they have a wife, a dog, a this, a that, a parent. This kid's 20 years old. It's still chaotic. It's very chaotic to arrive in Fenway Park or arrive in your hotel at 11 o'clock in the morning. You're 20 years old in Boston and you're going to go play baseball that night and all the cameras are following you around. Like I think the modern part of all of this, starting when these kids are 13 years old and hold up the Alabama sign and say, I'm going out. Like it's a different era for all of that, but I don't think it's different when you walk into Fenway Park and it's your first time and you miss a ball in the outfield and the run scores and you're walking back and we're all, but at least not everybody was there to see you. I mean, Friday night, this kid's going to get the hero's welcome that Weeders got, that all of the Curt Schilling got 35 years ago, the night I went out with my dad on the bus and saw him make his debut. All of these debut guys, I think this is Elias being real smart. Put him in a big building, put him against right-handed pitching, put him in where, you know, there's media aren't here, nobody's flooding down, everybody's not coming down here to do this. Let him do it on Friday and give him a chance. And I don't know when Mike Elias stood in front of you that he really would have thought that on April 12th he'd be making his debut in Baltimore, right? Like, he seemed pretty convicted in Sarasota that this kid needed more time.
Yeah, and that's where, look, I'm you're still not going to convince me that this wasn't weird as far as the timing of it or the handling of it, but it's fine. Like, I'm not sitting here. I have intellectual curiosity about it. Mm-hmm. You know, that I just do because 10 days is not a meaningful sample. 10 games is not a meaningful sample if you tell me he needs to work on this and this. So that's all.
Well, the one thing they've eliminated is the clock starting thing, right?
Right.
The thing that we would talk about money and about John Angelis, that's right. Over with. So that's good. That's good.
Yeah, well, I mean, other than if he struggles and then they send him back down. I mean,
well, that's what you have to do. You're back.
Yeah, and that's a distinct possibility, right?
May 20,
exactly.
You got to go. Yeah.
Yeah, for a competitive, contending club, right? A club that won 101 games last year. So, you know, again, I don't want to dwell too much on that because the excitement and the fun and the electricity of him being up is all there, and that's going to continue to be there. Not just Friday night when they give out T-shirts and they're going to have a really good crowd. I mean, it's first Friday night home game of the 2024 season. And I mean, this kid's been talked about for a couple of years. The difference now, and I even wrote this, I went back and looked, and I even linked it in my 12 Orioles thoughts, kind of recapping, you know, Wednesday night's game, was the difference for him. And this what came in the full focus on Wednesday night is he's not like Adley Rutschman coming here a couple years ago, where he, you know, Rutschman was viewed as the savior, even though we knew Gunnar Henderson and other guys were on the way. We saw Gunnar Henderson a few months after that, but Adley Rutschman was the face of the rebuild, right? I mean, they were as low as the Orioles have ever been on the field when they drafted him 1-1. You know, first time they drafted someone first overall since Ben McDonald, 30 years before that. So the difference with Jackson Holliday is he doesn't have that level of pressure other than just the general pressure of debuting in and of itself. But he was around this with his father for not a Hall of Fame career, but a Hall of very good career, 7-time All-Star kind of career. Throughout the day on social media, I mean, there are video clips of Jackson Holliday being around Major League Baseball stadiums and even running around and having fun with his dad. And, you know, at 3 years old, 10 years old, whatever it was.
Well, the videos of the kid are great, right?
But he's been, the point is he's been around this. So that's where, like, and what you just had to say about young players in general is right. But he's been around it to a different degree. Not to say there aren't any nerves.
Well, let me throw in that if Ben McDonald and I were still friendly after 30 years, because mm-hmm. we were 30 years ago, I remember, and I tweeted with Ben this week. I don't know if you caught that or not. Ben tweeted me back. Thank you, Ben. And Ben took me out to lunch with Brad Pennington at Benihana in Toronto in 1994. We were in the lobby of the Harbor Castle West, and he's like, "Hey, get in the cab. I'll buy you lunch. We're going over to Benihana." And I'm like, okay, let's get, it's pretty good, Ben. So we go over, and I started, like, we were just having lunch. And so how many ball games you go to, Nasty? You from Baltimore, right? And I'm like, man, I went to 40 games, 30, 40 games a year. He said, my daddy took me one time to the Astrodome to see Nolan Ryan pitch. When Ben McDonald came up to pitch, came out of the bullpen, John Raffalitis and I were down in Ocean City, and he was the savior, and he came out of the bullpen the night that he came in to pitch. It was like the second or third time he'd ever been in a big league ballpark in his life. Like, because he didn't have a dad to play the big leagues for 15 years. So my memories of having a press credential, all the years that I had one, I absolutely 1,000,000%, 100,000,000% saw Prince Fielder on the couch in the visitors clubhouse with his father when his father was a Tiger. 1,000,000%. Mm-hmm. And 1,000,000% I saw Rock Raines. Tim Raines' son, when Tim Raines was at the end, not just playing, but I'm talking about little kids. Early on in my, Tony Gwynn Jr. saw him all the time when he was a boy, and then he became a man who played. So, like, all of these years that seeing these players, I don't need to talk about Cal Sr., who I never really spoke to because I was always intimidated by him, but what that's meant for the Ripken family, even to the point where they give him the number 7. So, you know, my last name's Aparicio. You know, I have more than respect for people who played the game and people around the game and their children being prodigies to the game, because there's a long century-old heritage of families like the Ripkins and families like the Bells and families like the Boones that just make a lot of, like, the Baldingers in football. They make a lot of baseball players, you know?
Yeah, and look, that doesn't guarantee success, but it puts you in a position that you are very familiar with what it looks like, what it entails, what it requires, the perks of it, the drawbacks of it, all of that. So I think that's why when you've heard Mike Elias speak about Jackson Holliday, and I don't mean 3 weeks ago in Sarasota when they reassigned him, but just in a general sense, even going back to 2 years ago, when at the time, keep in mind, there was plenty of debate between Holliday and another pedigree kid in Andrew Jones' son, Drew Jones, who got hurt right after signing with Arizona. He's had multiple injuries. He's still at low A ball. I mean, think about that. He's still at low A ball. That's not a knock
on
him.
And he still might go to the Hall of Fame. Literally,
yeah,
right?
I'm 20 sure,
years old,
sure.
Right? Literally, right?
I mean, I don't know about going to the Hall of Fame, but he's still fine, right? He's a 20-year-old at A ball. It's not like it's – I'm sure Diamondbacks fans are disappointed and saying, wow, it would have been nice if the Orioles didn't take Jackson Holliday, and we did. But the point is there's also luck involved. There's also – fortune involved in this process, but the Orioles picked the right guy, clearly. And, you know, he's definitely mature beyond his years in terms of everything we've seen. He's married at age 20, which
that's
certainly
right.
In this day and age, more and more peculiar. But hey, if that's, you know, if he met the love of his life and that's how it's going to go, great for him.
It's going to help him acclimate in Baltimore to be married.
Sure,
You know,
I
he'll
mean,
give him one less thing to get in trouble. Or actually, about 100 things less to get in trouble for. He's a good-looking
you would
kid.
certainly hope so, right? So,
Yeah.
I mean, it's all sitting there, and that's why I said the way Mike Elias has talked about Holiday, despite his age, again, we're talking about someone who's not going to be 21 until December. You really have gotten a sense that he's just so confident that this kid is going to be absolutely as good as he's capable of being, whether that's a Hall of Famer, whether that's a seven-time All-Star like his dad, or whether that's just, hey, he's a good player, but he's never a great player. You know,
P.J.
whatever he,
Surhoff, how about that?
yeah. So, but they think he's going to be a great player, right? I mean, the consensus around baseball for quite a while has been that this kid's special. So it didn't flash before your eyes on Wednesday night in the results, and that's fine. You know, it's one game of baseball. But the point I was getting ready to make is he's walking into such a good situation that he hit ninth, and the guys hitting seventh and eighth were also former first round picks in recent years, and they combined to drive in 5 runs to lead a 5-0 comeback victory, 7-5.
It's an
So,
embarrassment of riches, right?
yeah,
For
I mean,
all
that's
of
the
these
thing.
names we've talked about, all of these guys in any era, take any of these six guys, right, that are the young guns on this team. In any era, if the Orioles had one of them, I mean, and I'm talking
Sure.
about Oriole history going back 40 years, for every Jim Fuller and Drungo Hazewood and Bob Baylor and Ken Gerhardt and Craig Worthington, I'm making you sick, aren't I? Jeffrey Hammonds, we just go Rocky Copley. We go through all of these guys that were going to be an all-star. Matt Wieters was going to go to the Hall of Fame, right? Like all of these names. Markakis was a very good player that had a very, very good career that we'll just be ho-hum about was Markakis. Markakis is a really good player. But much like Holiday, they said he's not going to hit for power. And he kind of really never did in that way, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, Markakis hit a lot of doubles. You know, his first 4 or 5 years, he hit for more power than he ended up kind
But
of.
he's not going to be a 30-30 kind of guy. Like the way Adam Jones's power came on, he had a lot of home runs.
Yeah, I mean, Jackson Holiday, I'm not going to put any cap on someone who's 20 years old
Sure.
and playing in the majors. I mean, now, do I think he's going to be a 50 home run guy one day? No. But if you tell me right now, like if you have the orange crystal ball and say he's a guy that hits 30 home runs a year, I'm not going to bat an eyelash about that. And you think about that as a second baseman or shortstop long term, wherever he ends up playing. And we'll see how that plays out in the coming years. He's going to be their second baseman for the foreseeable future with Gunnar Henderson at short. You know, kid's already gotten stronger. If you look at him this year compared to last year, when he put up incredible numbers starting at Delmarva and finishing up at Norfolk, you know, he's already
He's
filling
not
out.
big though. He's not Aaron Judge walking
He's
into
not,
it.
yeah, I mean, he's not 6'5". You know, he's not Corey Seager, but he's also filled out, and you see the forearms. And I don't mean like steroid, you know, innuendo or anything like that. Just that
Steve Garvey. Steve
he's filling out
Garvey.
as a 19, 20, 21-year-old. I mean, his dad, you know, Matt Holliday, big frame. You know, like not a hawking Aaron Judge big, but big guy, looked like a legit major league hitter, and was for a long, long, long time. So, you know, it's just for him, it's just a matter of coming in and fitting in. You know, he doesn't need to come in and bat leadoff or second or third. Although, if he's as good as he's been at every other level, then he'll probably be hitting in the top half of the order before too long. But for right now, he comes in, gets acclimated, and he's part of a team that is 7-4 and a team that, you know, hasn't gotten off to the most amazing start with the bats, but there is plenty of juice in that lineup. And I think what's amazing, Nestor, is Wednesday night. Let's go through the lineup really quick. Gunnar Henderson, first round pick or second round pick 2019, right after Adley Rutschman. Adley Rutschman, of course, 1-1. Anthony Santander wasn't drafted by the Orioles, but taken in the Rule 5 and has played nowhere else but Baltimore as a major leaguer and has turned himself into a really rock solid major league hitter. Ryan O'Hearn, the one castoff that they got from the Kansas City Royals. Everyone else, Mountcastle, Mullins, Kowser, Westberg, Holiday, all drafted by the Orioles, whether it's Mike Elias or the end of the Dan Duquette era. So to have a lineup of technically 7 out of 9, but really 8 out of 9, because Santander, again, was not remotely a finished product when he was taken in the Rule 5 draft, to essentially have 8 out of 9 guys that you have not drafted, but cultivated at the very least, you know, nurtured, developed, and seven of those guys legitimately being drafted. I mean, that's crazy talk. You know what it makes me think of, Nestor? Whenever you check out something like Baseball Prospectus or Baseball America, and they're looking at a farm system, and usually when you see a section like that, whether you're talking about a magazine, they still have those, I think, or whether you're just talking about it on a website, you'll generally see a projected lineup that's 2 or 3 years out, and it's always homegrown players because you can't predict free agent signings or trades or anything like that. Wednesday night was as close as you get to, if you had 2 years ago, what would be the projected 2024 lineup, you could have anticipated all, eight of those nine guys other than O'Hearn being acquired last offseason. So if you read a Baseball America type magazine in July of 2022, right after they selected Holiday, and someone said, oh, they're 2024, although it probably would have been 2025, because even then no one would have said Holiday would have been to the majors this quickly, but all homegrown guys in a projected lineup, that's something you see in Baseball America magazine, not against the Red Sox Wednesday night at Fenway Park, a team that is coming off of a first place playoff season. So, I mean, it's why I wrote, you look at the 21 months, just go back to when Holiday was drafted, not even going back before then, when the Orioles, it started to turn the corner a couple months before that, back in 22. But you couldn't ask the plan, not even the rebuild, because the rebuild is long gone at this point. But you could not have asked everything to play out as well, as smoothly as it has from a player development standpoint. And that's even with Grayson Rodriguez having the injury the second half of 22. That's even with DL Hall not developing into, a top half of the rotation guy, although we're going to see him this weekend.
It just feels like they've all been successes, right? Like, literally, right? It just feels like they've hit on everybody. They might even hit on Stowers.
Just about.
Stowers may go and play for the Yankees for 8 years and be an all – like, who knows, right? But they –
who knows?
They're not going to have room for him here. Like
you wouldn't think so,
think
right?
Play here.
Unless someone else gets traded, and then that opens up a spot for him. I mean, that's just where we are at this point. So, I mean, my goodness, we talked about it, and I'm not saying this to pat myself on the back at all, because lots of people were saying this, but – Colton Cowser, at the very least, at this point in time, we're seeing a platoon in left field. He's starting against right-handed pitching now.
Yeah, he has ousted an all-star from 8 months ago. Like, literally, right? Like, for at-bats right now, that's where he is in first-round pick, right? I mean, yeah. a blue-chip prospect. But that's just one. And he's
sure
not even in the top four. Maybe not even in the top five of this organization right now.
Yeah, I mean, it's just it's an embarrassment of riches. It really is, and that's why when I've looked at this, when I've talked about the pitching, when I've seen the logjam in the outfield or the infield, when I criticize, saying, hey, you need to make another move, or go trade one of these guys that's blocked for a pitcher, I don't say that saying that Mike Elias has done a poor job. I mean, that would be dumb to say that. But it's just, it really truly is a case of, you have so much of this talent that I don't know how they're all going to get here. I know Holiday talked about it before the game on Wednesday, that he has a text group with the other guys that are at Norfolk right now, talking about Kobe Mayo and Connor Norby and Stowers and Heston Kerstad. And they all kind of said, one down, four to go. And look, that's stuff that early 20-somethings are saying. And that's fine. They're friends. They're on the road and riding the buses in the minor leagues. I mean, that's a different culture, compared to playing in the majors.
Well, it also creates different kinds of relationships that stay with you the rest of your life, literally, right?
We all know the reality of that is they're not all going to be in the majors unless they end up making a couple trades, and they do trade a Hayes or someone like that. So, but it's going to be very
difficult. Ryan Ripken talks on his radio show all the time about all these players that were his contemporaries, right? Like, he's not in the big leagues. He never made it. He's doing radio. He's very good at it. He's a nice guy. But these are the other guys that he expected to be on the field with. And it doesn't happen for everybody, even if your name's Ripken, right? Literally.
Yeah. I mean, that's a good example. And look, I mean, he was at that point, he was already kind of the career minor league guy at that point when he did play with some of these guys, because, he wasn't. At no point was he a prospect with the Orioles, right? I mean, the Nationals drafted him, all that. But, yeah, there's a perfect example. It doesn't always work out. Not that, Ryan Ripken was never really a prospect. I mean, he was never
but
considered
he's
in
a
that
name
same
we
light.
know, but there's dozens but speaks, and dozens of those guys riding buses that are never going to make it, right?
Sure.
And these couple of guys that you I mean, Kobe Mayer's going to get hit. He's going to have at bats in the big league. Now, whether he makes it or not, Stowers, they're all going to, based on the way they're playing in Norfolk right now, based on their ages, they're all going to be in the big leagues in the next 18 months or given a chance to play if they don't get injured.
Somewhere,
right?
yeah. I mean, barring an injury, absolutely. I mean, Stowers has already been here, right? You know, we've seen him struggle in the way we saw Colton Cowser struggle last year, and now we're seeing Colton Cowser having a lot of success, you know, carrying them, you know, not carrying them, but being a major part of what they're doing offensively at this point. So, I mean, it's just fun. And again, that's where I go back to the pressure and the spotlight that was on Adley Rutschman at that point in time in the rebuild, compared to now where it's Jackson Holliday, where, look, I don't say this lightly. They have high expectations for Jackson Holliday. That's obvious, right? I mean, you don't bring someone up to the major leagues at 20 years and a few months if you didn't have expectations through the moon. I mean, you mentioned the lack of minor league at-bats. You were seeing the comps. I saw it on MLB Network TV Wednesday morning. They put up the comps of the number of at-bats that he had compared to Juan Soto and his accelerated development before he arrived in D.C. at a very similar age. So, I mean, that's very rare territory there. So that's where I say the sky is the limit. I mean, it's not talking out of turn to say that this kid doesn't have Hall of Fame potential. It's not me predicting that he's going to be Hall of Famer. The point is, when you're talking about a 20-year-old reaching the major leagues, the ceiling is – I mean, it's as high as it gets for
any
player.
And when you bring him up, you don't bring him up and say, let's see how he does. Let's see if he can handle it.
Sure.
When you're in the pennant race and you already have credible major league, even if they are Urias and Mateo and Kemp, whatever. And by the way, the Kemp thing, very classy. I want to throw that out as well. But not,
was, yeah.
Yeah, but that's not out of character for him. That's why they brought him in here. Right. You need to have more of that, less of that in a general humanity. But we do spotlight it as being special in baseball that somebody would actually do that, but and a veteran guy, and he was on the roster opening day, got some money for that. But for me, with thinking about this Holliday thing, to your point, Tuesday night we sent out the text, we're like, he's coming up, he's coming to Boston. And in your mind, in my mind, we're thinking, are you sure? Like, what, why here? Why? And I guess I've scratched my head for a day and a half and thinking about it. Fenway Park, right-handed pitching, keep him away from Baltimore, give him a couple of days to get ready. But to your point, they're convicted. They didn't bring him up because Rubenstein's on the phone saying, I want to see the 20-year-old. You know, like, they're convicted to do this. And I think it would be devastating for them if May 8th they have to send him back because he's hitting 143 and really struggling. And
sure.
Like, if they weren't completely convicted, they wouldn't have brought him up because they didn't have to. They didn't have to. That's yeah. Probably the biggest thing on Tuesday. You were like, here, what? You don't have to do that right now, you know, but maybe they felt like, yeah, we need the offense and this is where it's going to be at the end of the year. Let's go. Let's get him up here. And I don't know what point that changed or whether Elias is going to be honest about it, but it's clear. I always say to you on draft day, who's Eric going to draft? You'll see when the 30th picks up how he rates players and what we saw, how they feel about him, despite the fact in Sarasota a couple weeks ago, you were like, well, maybe the clock, maybe this left-handed pitching, all of those excuses. It is curious, but it's also inevitable, right? So pulling the Band-Aid off, as you said earlier.
Yeah. And that's where, and again, I don't want to dwell on this point because I don't think it's in the grand scheme of things going to be the make or break. But, you know, that's where I kind of said, when I say why now, it's not me saying, oh, he needs another month. It's me saying, I don't know why they just didn't bring him north on opening day. That's all. And look, left-handed starters, I hear all that. I think it's all flimsy. But he's here, and that's what matters. And he's part of a team that's already really good, and now they have the potential to be even better. And you have this kid who has this extraordinary talent. I don't think it's going to be too big for him. That doesn't mean he's not going to have some struggles. I think that's inevitable. I think that's where people need to be patient. Whether he was going to be up on opening day 2 weeks later or a month from now, I think that's where some patience is warranted. If he does get off to a 3-for-30 start, let's pump the brakes on saying, oh, he needs to go back to the minors. You know, if it's 3-for-60, then okay, then we'll revisit that in the way that We had to with Colton Cowser, who, by the way, already has more hits this year than he had last year in the major leagues, and more extra base hits. So it speaks to, again, there's a learning curve, even for guys that were college hitters. So, you know, all that being aside, put his name in the lineup every day, let him go out there. You know, he's going to have a hiccup here or there. Again, like I said, I still think that pop fly that fell, I'll continue to say, I thought that was Cedric Mullins' ball to go after. Maybe he doesn't catch it, but I think he has the better angle there. It should always be the outfielder calling off an infielder. It's easier to come in than go back on a play like that. But even though it happened, so what? I mean, he's ready to be at this level, as we always say, and we've seen this with numerous prospects that have come up here over the last 2 to 3 years. Development does not finish at AAA Norfolk. It continues in the major league. So it's important to remember that. The good news is, and that's why I keep coming back to this, he's not viewed as the savior. He's viewed as one of the boys, right? I mean, that's literally what this is. And they had two guys hitting before him in the bottom third of the lineup on Wednesday night who drove in five runs, who were former first round picks themselves. And it just speaks to how crazy their collection of talent is at this point in time.
I went and grabbed the pizza before the game, and the guys making pizza in the pizza shop, who no longer sponsor us, so I'm not going to plug them, but said to me, hey, where's he batting in the lineup? I was picking up pizza. I'm like, nice. He's like, oh, I like that. You know, in front of Henderson and Rutschman, you know, that's like, so I can't begin to tell you the last time anybody walked up to me in a pizza shop in East Baltimore and started talking where somebody's batting a lineup. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, it's a whole different level. Where's he batting? How, you know, what position are they going to put him in to succeed? And I would think at this day and age, you're talking about Elias and this kind of organization, and John Angelos is off sunning himself somewhere, that this organization is going to be very grown up about how this is handled. So, you know, they made their decision. He's here. And that says they think he's ready. And
yeah.
And they've also tried to put him in a position in the lineup to protect him a little bit too, to your point.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, a couple things. One, you touched on it. I'm glad about it. Tony Kemp, class. Might we all show such grace in the face of personal disappointment to express wishes of good luck? And, you know, even shared an anecdote of seeing a young Jackson Holliday at one point in time. So that was cool to see. Really appreciated the reverence shown between the Ripken and the Holliday families for Jackson Holliday to be wearing number 7, you know, a number that hadn't officially been retired, but had not been issued by the Orioles since Cal Sr. was dismissed back after the 92 season. I mean, Billy's the last guy to have worn it as a player in 88 after Cal Sr. was fired after an 0-6 start, which, you know, 36 years later is still ridiculous to hear that. And that even preceded Peter Angelos.
Oh, but if you Google Matt Holliday, all of his career, he spoke of Cal Ripken being his favorite player.
Yeah. Yeah, and he wore number 7 for most, not his entire career, but his run in St. Louis, where he played in 2 World Series. So cool to hear the Holliday family had reached out to Cal, reached out to Billy to say, hey, Jackson, you know, number 7's always been a number that he's liked. Would it be okay for him to wear it? And I think this is also where Cal Ripken being part of the new ownership group certainly didn't hurt matters as it pertained to getting that done. All for it. The number wasn't officially retired. As I saw some people point out on Facebook and Twitter and whatnot, I mean, lots of people remember Cal Sr. for 47 as much as wearing number 7, right? And Belanger wore number 7 for years, of course. So, you know, that I thought that was a fun little, you know, not anecdote, but just a subplot of the debut that he's wearing that number, knowing what that number means to the Ripken family, seeing the Ripken family give their blessing, Cal on social media, Billy on MLB Network. And Jackson Holliday even was asked about it before the game. And he said, I'm honored to wear it. And look, I'm not going to sit here and say that Jackson Holliday is intimately familiar with Cal Sr., someone who passed away before he was even born. But I think he certainly understands the importance of the Ripken family. And to your point, Matt Holliday certainly understands the importance of the Ripken family in the history of Baltimore baseball. So I just thought that was cool. I mean, I thought short of him hitting a home run on Wednesday night, the debut and how, you know, his arrival, putting aside the questions from guys like me who just, you know, wondered about why now and not opening day, whatever. Forget about that. How it was handled Wednesday and his arrival and the excitement and seeing, you know, you made mention of this. Okay, it was Fenway. Go look at some of the pictures of the dugout when he did his pregame media. It was a mob scene. So there were still some national reporters who made it there. But I thought it all went, came off without a hitch. And, oh, yeah, the Orioles erased a 5-0 deficit on a night when, Cole Irvin was not very good, but I also was a little unlucky. I thought that pop fly, really bad missed third strike call on a 3-2 pitch to Devers that would have gotten him out of the fifth, and then he gives up a home run right after that. So he wasn't good enough. I'm not going to sit here and try to talk up a five inning outing where he gave up five runs. But
I just don't think you can't start baseball games in October with him. We got to get better between here and there. That's all.
Well, in fairness, even as they're presently constructed, he's not starting baseball. He's their number five starter. That's right. But yeah, he wasn't good enough. And look, on paper, if Means comes back at the very least, Cole Irvin's the guy to go. If Bradish comes back also, and he's getting ready to start a rehab start, and that's a big if, I understand that. I mean,
Gene Kramer won't be starting games in October, right?
Well, probably Tyler Wells. I know Tyler Wells was officially the number three starter. Dean Kramer's clearly outpitched him early on and has the track record of last year too. Point is, they didn't go into the season saying, "Oh, Cole Irvin's one of our five." It's where they are right now from a health standpoint. And in the meantime, you have Cade Povich and McDermott and some other guys at AAA that could get a look at some point in time. But I'll say it again because look, I had still do concerns about the bullpen. In a big picture sense, they were lights out on Wednesday night. I'll say this, the guy that has really come on kind of out of nowhere, what's gotten into Keegan Aiken? I mean, he's been excellent for them. He was supposed to be the long man in the pen, give them length on a night where Cole Irvin gets knocked out in the third inning or something like that. And he's pitching in more and more, at least higher leverage situations because of how well he's throwing. I mean, he threw two innings and striking people out. And
well, 3 years ago, he would have been considered one of their better arms, right? I mean, he was sure. One of the guys when Bundy was still here and like all of that was on the track. And to your point, it doesn't happen fast for everybody. And it doesn't mean that, somebody who's stuck at high A ball right now won't go to the Hall of Fame, or that Keegan Aiken won't have a 10-year career and be the Jim Johnson of this bullpen at some point. I don't know, but it is heartening. And again, this is so different than the Angelos regime or even anything Buck Showalter back, is that all the one track record on Elias through all of this is guys get better. Guys get better here. They figure out spin rate on pitchers. They figure out launch. They figure out things in the cage. They figure out things through video. And if they have the right person who can modify, you always come with the Sigmeidel, growth mindset, right? If they have those kind of guys, then they can improve. And
yeah,
Keegan Aiken, it does not shock me. I don't quit on any of these guys in this system if they have talent and if they're healthy, because I think this organization gives them clearly. I mean, I've never been more bullish on this. I don't sit here all day and talk about it, but they win 103 games this year. We'll be talking about it every day, how good they are and how good they are at a talent evaluation. And that's all well and good. It's one thing to say, Jackson Holliday, he's going to be great. Let's bring him up. It's a different thing to have him ready to play when he's 20. That it's on him for sure. But the sports science they do around here and the way that they look at analytics and the way that they're taking care of their players and the way that they teach their players, they're doing it better than anybody. They're top of class. So give John Angelos 2 points for that, for hiring the right people.
He did. He did. I mean, say what you want about everything else, and we've said plenty and probably will still say plenty in the future as we see how new ownership shapes, reshapes, evolves, in terms of how the organization looks. But you're right. And look, even if Keegan Aiken's back in Norfolk at this time a month from now, he's given them some major contributions right now, and it's kind of what you need, right? Cano came out of nowhere last year, Batista a couple years before that. So, I mean, that's how this works. So at this point in time, despite my concerns about the bullpen, and I still have them big picture wise, but boy, they were really good on Wednesday night. And it was a big reason why they were able to stage a comeback from a 5-0 deficit as they got the Cutter Crawford out of the game. And another night, second straight night also. Red Sox defense, bad. I mean,
PU.
That catcher, bad. I mean, you can't kick the ball around like against the Orioles or anyone in the AL East and expect to win games. So, you know, that little bit of a reality check for the Red Sox the last couple of nights. And hey, now it's a matter of Grayson Rodriguez, opportunity for a sweep and coming home and what's going to be surely an electric atmosphere on Friday night with Jackson Holliday making his debut. So a lot of fun. And as I wrote in my 12 Orioles thoughts in the aftermath of the Holliday debut, it's a really fun time to be an Orioles fan with this latest debut, in addition to all the other guys that are already here and more on the way in the coming weeks and months and years.
Come see us at Fadley's on Friday. I will have non-scratched off Pac-Man. And I made a mistake. I was on with John Martin from the Maryland Lottery. I called this a losing ticket. He's like, no. This is a non-winning ticket. It's a second chance ticket. So I want to let everybody know that we're going to have that and second chances and third chances to go to the Orioles game and four chances to get delicious crab cakes at the all-new Lexington Market. We'll be at Fadley's from 2 until 5 live. I'm holding live radio. You know, it adds to the gray in my beard. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and we never stop talking Baltimore positive. I got good at that.